And start up. So last week we did the first half of Perek Yud-Gimel, Shmuel Beis. Maybe the most despicable, or if not one of the most despicable stories in all of Tanakh, the Amnon's rape of Tamar, and the real beginning of the serious punishment and collapse of the monarchy of David HaMelech, right? We saw the Navi's references to the Yosef story and the Navi's references to the Dina story, you know, David as, once again, Yaakov Avinu, a theme that really Sefer Shmuel has come back to again and again, except now he's you know, Yaakov all wrapped up into one, the loss of his son Yosef and the rape of his daughter Dina, right? David is getting both of those with Tamar being compared to Yosef and to Dina. The Navi kind of linking Amnon with Yosef as well, but in a really perverse way, right? Because this is really the polar opposite. Yosef, the ultimate example of somebody who can withstand even the greatest Yetzirah, and Amnon on the extreme opposite end, who had every single reason to not do what he did, ranging from everything that he's going to lose. I'm just going to close WhatsApp just one second. Right, anything he's going to lose as a result of doing this. And as Tamar herself points out to Amnon, he could have done this all in a permitted manner, right? So in a case where he had everything to lose, nothing to gain, but he goes ahead anyway and does one of the most despicable things in Tanakh. And the last point we made, I think, at the very end was that the Navi also is sending us back to another rape, right? What we had at the end of Sefer Shoftim, there were some lines there that really were like cut and paste out of the story of Pilegesh Begiva, and it seems to be, you know, indicating to us that we are now heading on the road to civil war. Right, the first great civil war that Bnei Yisrael have had since the one we had at the end of Sefer Shoftim. So, a little bit of screen share. I actually want to go back to one of the psukim we did at the end of this year last week, because we kind of glossed over it, and it's going to really set things up for us now. Because last week, we focused very much on Amnon and on Tamar. Now, as we get to the second half of the parak, it is really time for us to start delving into the fascinating personality of Avshalom. And the Navi gives us the first window here, but it's a very puzzling pasuk, right? The Navi tells us, so Avshalom sees his sister Tamar, who is crying on the street, right? Her clothes are torn. She has dirt on her head. She's going nuts because her whole life has just been destroyed. But let's read what Avshalom actually says. Right? Was your brother Amnon, you know, little Amnon with you? Dismissive line. Ata achosi hacharishi, my sister, be quiet. Achichu, he's your brother. Al tashisi es libech ledavar hazeh, don't let this bother you. Vateshev Tamar v'shomima beis Avshalom achia. And then Tamar remains desolate inside the house of Avshalom. And at first glance, the image that we are kind of supposed to have, and maybe it's because we project the end of the parak onto the beginning, is that Avshalom is taking his sister in, right? We know what is going to happen. In fact, in two psukim, the Navi is going to tell us that Avshalom has a consuming hatred for Amnon for what he did. Sanei Avshalom es Amnon, al davar asher ina es Tamar chuso. He despises Amnon for raping his sister, as we can totally understand. And so we put the fact that he despises Amnon together with the fact that he brings Tamar into his house, right? He takes her in. And the impression we get at first is the compassion that Avshalom is showing for his sister. And here is somebody who is going to be one of the great bad guys in Avshalom, right? But we begin with his more complicated side. You know, he's still a loving brother. But if we stop and think for a second, like what Avshalom actually says, it's a little bit surprising, and it really does point to some of Avshalom's core personality. Because is Avshalom trying to comfort his sister? Because if he is trying to comfort his sister, you know, thinking back to when, like, we had the pastoral counseling classes in YU Smicha, this is not probably what we would advise to say. What's the first thing he says? Ata achosi hacharishi? Be quiet? I mean, she's just been raped. Her life's been destroyed by her sort of brother, you know, a not technical brother, but, you know, basically brother. Be quiet? What? How is it the first thing? And then the next thing Avshalom says is, achichu, he's your brother. What does it mean he's your brother? Some of the Mepharshim say, we have to give him kavod because he's your brother. It makes everybody look bad because he's your brother. But why is that the priority that Avshalom has over here? And then he says, don't let this bother you. Don't let it bother you. Of course it's going to bother her. I mean, she's been destroyed. What is Avshalom saying? These are not words of comfort. All right. So even though we said last week that when Chazal, you know, the Midrashim about Shimon taking Dina into his house, and that probably also came from Chazal seeing the parallel here between the story of Dina and her brothers and Tamar and her brothers, right? And the image of Shimon's tender side. But it's not a perfect parallel. Avshalom is not prioritizing here comforting his sister. He cares, but this is very telling as to how he thinks. He absolutely cares, but the way he reacts is not to think right away in terms of human care and emotion, and let's pick up the pieces of the person who's been broken. Avshalom's main reaction is he wants revenge. Right? He's not prioritizing comforting his sister. He is prioritizing avenging his sister. And that really gets drawn out by what's going to happen. Well, look at the Pasuk Chaf Beis, and the Barbanel says a Pasuk Chaf Beis. We put it together with Pasuk Chaf, and we can understand what Avshalom is doing over here. First, the Navi tells us in Pasuk Chaf Aleph that David hears what happens, and he's very angry. And that's great, right? David's wonderful. Vayichar lo ma'od, David is furious, but of course, David doesn't do anything, right? And this is the theme of really the whole parak here, and then continuing beyond here, where David again and again and again is going to be paralyzed, which is totally shocking because David is the ultimate man of action. And here all of a sudden we see David, he's kind of behaving like Eli in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. You know, the person who cares and is upset and not happy with what his sons are doing, but feels paralyzed and too weak to do anything about it, right? And whether that's happening because David loves his child, probably not here. Here it's probably happening because David just doesn't feel like he has a leg to stand on, because David is still just paralyzed from what happened with the sin of Bathsheba. You know, Hashem may have forgiven David, but David is not forgiven. For the Nabi that says in Pasuk Chafez, "Lo diber Avshalom Amnon l'mirav yatov." So Avshalom did not talk to Amnon for good or for bad or for good, right? Because Avshalom hated Amnon so much. So it sounds like the Nabi is telling us that Avshalom did not talk to Amnon at all, right? He gave him the total silent treatment. And this reminds us once again another throwback to the Yosef story, where Yosef's brother said, "Lo yachlu dabro l'shalom," and Rashi there quoted the Medrash that this was the point of pride for the brothers, that at least they did not put up a fake front. You know, they clearly showed how much they hated Yosef, so they couldn't talk to him. That sounds like the same thing is happening with Avshalom. He won't talk to Amnon at all. But the Barbanel reads the pasuk differently. The Barbanel asks a very good question. What's going to happen in a couple of psukim? The way Avshalom is going to take revenge is by getting David to send Amnon to his party. Now, it's going to be crazy enough for Amnon to go and be as careless as he is when he goes there. But the Abarbanel is going to ask, right, if Avshalom never talked to Amnon, and Avshalom made it clear and obvious as the light of day that he hated Amnon more than anybody in the world, then how on earth could he get Amnon to come to his party? Right? Says he would talk. Avshalom put on a fake face. He would talk to Amnon all the time. Otherwise, how's Amnon coming to Avshalom's party and having a good time and getting himself drunk? If he knows that Avshalom hates him, he should be wary when he gets a special invite to come to the party. And even if he says yes, he should have his security with him and he should not be getting drunk. So Abarbanel says it can't be. It must be that Avshalom is putting up a friendly face and getting Amnon to think that nothing is wrong. It says, what does the Navi mean over here when it says, Lo diber av shalom? He says, we have to read the Pasuk a little bit out of order. Means that Avshalom did not talk to Amnon for good or for bad about al devar asher ina as tamar achosa. Says the real point of the Navi here is not that Avshalom did not talk to Amnon, but that Avshalom did not give musr to Amnon. If you want to move past something with someone, you need to raise it, right? You need to raise it. He quotes Chazal, the same we see here. You know, the failure of giving tochacha. No tochacha, no musr. He says that's exactly what's happening. Why? Because you basically, when someone does something wrong to you, so you're either going to correct them or you're going to seek revenge. He says that's how to understand the pasuk over here. He says, lo diber elav. What does it mean? In what manner did he not talk to him? Al devar sharina. Ein zesumuch li sana avshalom. Abel hu samuch lamala. Ki ilu amar. Here's what Barbanel happens to understand the pasuk. The lo diber avshalom im amnon. The meira v'ato. If he didn't talk to Amnon for good or bad, al devar sharina asamar chuzo. He wouldn't talk to him for good or for bad, saying, you know, either it's okay, it's not such a big deal what he did to my sister, let's get past it. Or saying, we need to have a conversation here about what a terrible thing it was that you did and how you're going to do tshuva. No, he didn't talk about that whole piece at all. He wasn't going to bring it up. Why wouldn't he bring it up? Because he hates Amnon. And his goal is not to repair the relationship with Amnon. His goal is to get revenge, right, with Amnon. But that's what Abarbanel is saying. So you put Pasuk Chaf and Pasuk Chaf Beis together, and what do we see about Avshalom's personality? He is somebody who, right, he thinks in terms of revenge. He's somebody with a strong emotional component to him, but it's not one which is inclined towards rachamim really at all. And forget about rachamim for Amnon. He doesn't need to have rachamim on Amnon. But his main response to what happens to his sister is revenge rather than comforting. And he is really good at revenge, right? He is amazing. You know, what happens? It takes 2 years. So Amnon, Avshalom is somebody who is willing and able to play the long game. He can wait patiently. He's going to pick his spot. He's going to wait until the time is going to come when Amnon is going to lower his guard. And until then, he's going to put up a wonderful fake face that everyone is going to buy. And then finally, after 2 years, so he has, he's shearing the sheep. Whenever you shear the sheep, that's a party. We've seen that earlier in Sefer Shmuel. Remember with Naval HaKarmeli, right? It was the time when Naval was shearing a sheep. That's the point when you make all your money. That's when you see how rich you've become that year. Same thing with Lavan, with Yaakov. So it's a very exciting time. We're going to shear all the sheep. We're going to sell the wool. We're going to get lots of money. And so Avshalom makes a party. So kind of interestingly, first Avshalom comes to David and he invites David to come to the party, right? The plan clearly is going to be that if David comes, everyone else is going to come too. David HaMelech says no, he's not coming, which is interesting. Once again, we see David, this just general sense of malaise that David seems to have fallen into over here. You know, a couple of Mefarshim say it's going to be immensely expensive, right? Whenever a king shows up, it's exorbitantly expensive to throw a party for a king and all his servants and everybody. So David doesn't want Avshalom to put up with that. But, you know, Avshalom is begging David to come. David's not doing it. It sounds like there's more than just trying to save Avshalom some money. It sounds like David is just not in a place where he feels like he can go to a party. Once again, we're getting that sense that he has not gotten past the sins with Bathsheba and with Uri. The question, though, is why does Avshalom want David to come? Because what Avshalom really wants is obvious. He makes that clear in Pasuk Chav and Pasuk Chav Zion. Avshalom tells David, okay, if you can't come, so at least have Amnon come. And, you know, Abarbanel points out that Amnon is the oldest son, so he's the presumed crown prince. So he's the next best thing, right? It's a very reasonable request. Okay, David, I wanted you and everybody else to come, but if I can't get David, at least I can get the next best thing, which is Amnon. It's clear that Avshalom wants Amnon to be there. Why does he want David? rising on top of it. So some of the Mefarshim suggest that Avshalom knew that David was going to say no, and all of this was a ruse so that Avshalom could make sure that he was going to get the person he really wanted, who was Amnon. I saw notes that at some point someone took from Shirim that Rav Yaakov Medan gave and the rest of Sefer Shmuel. You know, this is the stuff that's not in that book on David and Bathsheba. And the suggestion that they wrote up that he made in there, I think it makes a lot of sense, is that Avshalom wants David in the room because Avshalom wants to kill Amnon in front of David. And once again, this would be telling to us about the personality of Avshalom. He feels deeply wronged here, and he is going to make a statement, and he wants his father in the room. You did not do anything when this person raped my sister. I want you to see, I want you to be there in the room as I'm going to take action and I'm going to do it, right? Again, giving us the sense of a very passionate, bold, no fear, definitely no fear in Avshalom, someone who has a very deep sense of principles, right? But those can often be the most dangerous people. You know, when you have someone who has a very sense of, a very strong sense of principles, but it's, you know, not necessarily moored to his own self-sacrifice, that can get into a bad place. And that is what's going to happen with Avshalom, right? If it's very easy to feel a burning desire for revenge, and you feel good, you feel right, it feels just, but it's not the way to go. David's paralysis, not the way to go, but Avshalom's action here as well, not the way to go, right? And if we go back to the story of Dina, and we think of what Shimon and Levi do, you know, was it the right call, the wrong call, what they did? Well, by the end, Yaakov Avinu says no, you know, and my teacher, Rabbi Rosenzweig, really, I think the most sensitive analysis of that whole story that I've seen, because, right, the big mystery is, why does Yaakov say nothing? Yaakov is paralyzed at the end of the story of Dina. And then all of a sudden, in Parshas Vayechi, he comes flying in by saying, you know, Arura Pam Ki Az. And all of a sudden, he's cursing Shimon and Levi. Why does it take so long for Yaakov to take action? So the way he explains the story is that if you look at the Psukim in the Dina episode, there are many lines which have very intense moralistic impression. You know, Nivala Asab Yisrael, Hakach Zona Yeses Achosenu, Lo Yeseh, this should not be done, this can't be done in Israel, shall our sister be made like a harlot? Very, very, very principled lines coming from Shimon and Levi, right? Because what are they obsessed with? Caring for a sibling. Well, what happens between Parshas Vayishlach, when they avenge Dina, and Parshas Vayechi, which demonstrates that maybe Shimon and Levi are not completely fueled by caring for a sibling, you know, when they sell Yosef one parsha later, right? So it's the subsequent events that demonstrate that all the moralistic lines that Shimon and Levi had, what really belied them was just anger and rage and desire for revenge, rather than the healthier impulses of truly caring for their sister. And then Avshalom, we're going to see exactly the same pattern, right? He thinks he's doing the right thing, but when you are acting in that strain of revenge, it's very, very easy to realize that your own self-obsession with your own moral position can blind you to where you're going. And this is the beginning of that whole road for Avshalom. So, right, but he's brilliant. I mean, he puts on a total face. No one has any clue what's going on. The way Barbanel understands things, Avshalom has invested 2 years into this whole process. Before going on, I just want to reference one medrash that Barbanel quotes over here as well. Barbanel says a lot of interesting comments in this whole parak, which I think is really interesting to take a break from Avshalom for a second and to turn back to Amnon, right? But Barbanel quotes the Yerushalmi, which zeroes in on the fact that it takes 2 years for Avshalom to be able to pull this off. And there's no question that the pshat of the psukim is that it takes 2 years because that's how long Avshalom waits until he's absolutely sure that nobody suspects that he has any lingering anger towards Amnon. But The Yerushalmi looks at this in a different way, and the Yerushalmi says that it was Amnon's zechus which bought him a couple of years. Right? The Yerushalmi says, Yesh zechus tola shana achas. We have one case where someone's merit bought him a year, one person's merit bought him 2 years, right? Whose 1 year is Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, fine. And the case of 2 years is Amnon. Why did it take 2 years? So Gemara says, Amr Biyosi, Kol Osam Shneim Asar Chodesh Haya Asuk B'Mitzvos. Nebuchadnezzar spent 12 months doing Mitzvos. Okay, great. Kol Osam Shnei Shanim Haya Osek B'Torah. So the Yerushalmi is saying that Amnon spent 2 years learning Torah, right, after he does the Tamar. What is the point that the Yerushalmi is trying to get at over here, other than just a local explanation for why it takes 2 years for Amnon to be punished? Because that's not such a great question, right? Why did it take 2 years for Amnon to be punished? The answer to that, we said, is very clear. Just Amnon needs to wait that amount of time. The message I think that the Yerushalmi is getting at is a deep insight into how not to do tshuva, right? We talked about Amnon last week and the rage and the hatred he has for Tamar. And the explanation we saw for that last week was that response to sin like that and that guilt is universal. It turns into self-hatred. And then the question is, what does one do with that? Right? Amnon hates himself for what he's done. And so last week, he took that hatred of himself for what he did, and he externalized it and blamed it on Tamar. Literally the ultimate case of victim blaming. And that is a way of relieving his own guilt, right? He blames the person who brought him into that situation rather than actually trying to take responsibility for what he had done the way David did with Bathsheba. The Yerushalmi is doing here is giving us another example of how bad tshuva can be done. Amnon is racked with guilt for what he's done. That's reasonable, right? That's pretty clear from last week. He knows he's done a terrible thing. Anybody would realize that. But what's his response? His response is to throw himself into Torah, to throw himself into the Beis Medrash, right? Thinking of tshuva as like a scale. I made a mistake over here, and so I'll outweigh it with mitzvos over here. But once again, that is not how tshuva works. You can't have Tamar sitting shomeima in your brother's house and you try to fix things by delving into Torah. But it's a classic impulse of how to do tshuva, just by saying, I'll balance the wrong things with the right things. Once again, that's not how tshuva is supposed to work. The way tshuva is supposed to work is actually taking responsibility for what happened and trying to rectify it to the best of one's ability, where David was able to succeed and Amnon is not. I think that's the point that the Medrash is getting at over here. Why is it so important for us to think of Amnon spending 2 years in a yeshiva after what he did to Tamar? Okay. So Pesukim continue. So, right, Avshalom has successfully gotten Amnon invited to the party. And then the next couple of Pesukim once again give us insight into Avshalom's personality, right? Another piece here. So far we've seen Avshalom's, the revenge element of Avshalom. We've seen him being able to think long-term, being able to think strategically. We've seen Avshalom being able to put on a very convincing face. And now we're going to see really the fourth and maybe the most important piece of Avshalom's personality. And that is his total charisma and his ability to get other people to do anything for him. Navi says, Vaitzav Avshalom is now Rav Leimor, Re'u na kitov lev Amnon v'yayin. Wait until Amnon gets good and drunk. He knows his brother Amnon. He knows he's drunk. V'yamarti aleichem haku as Amnon. Right? You're going to kill him. Dami semoso. Kill Amnon. Al tiro halo ki anochi tzivis yeschem chesku v'yul v'nechayel. Don't be afraid. I'm commanding you to do it. Strengthen yourselves, right? Be man up. Be b'nechayel. It is a crazy risk what Avshalom is telling his servants to do. Avshalom is not doing it himself, right? He's not going to wield the knife by himself. He is telling his servants to do it. What protection are they going to have? What is the punishment for killing the crown prince, right? What's in it for them? They get nothing out of this. Avshalom is going to run after this happens. The Navi does not tell us what happens to the Ne'arim of Avshalom over here. There's probably a good chance that it wasn't something good. It's not their sister that they're trying to avenge. They get nothing out of this. But what happens? He's able to convince them. I told you to do it. Do it for me. Strengthen yourselves. And they listen to him. The Navi doesn't tell us that the lads killed Amnon. It says the lads listened to Avshalom. That the Navi is drawing our attention to the fact Avshalom has an unbelievably magnetic personality. He can convince people to walk off a cliff, right? He gets them to kill Amnon, and so then after that's done, so you know the rest of the princes flee. They run away immediately as soon as one son is killed, right? Same thing might happen. I mean, the first time the Jews ever had a king, it was Avimelech. How did Avimelech become king, the son of Gideon? Well, because he murdered all his other brothers. So it's reasonable for everyone else to panic and for them to run away. And then the Navi, shifts away from Avshalom to come back to the palace with David. And this part of the parak, we need to elaborate on the personality of the one other person who you've already seen in this parak. Right? By now, we have a pretty good handle on how the Navi is thinking of Tamar, right? Just the ultimate tragedy, the ultimate victim. We have a pretty good handle on how the Navi is thinking of David here. Just the father who's suffering tragedy after tragedy and the person who feels totally paralyzed and immobilized because of his previous mistakes. We're already getting a pretty good picture of Avshalom. Now we have to go back to the one other person in the story, and that was, remember Yonadav, right? The good friend of Amnon, which the Navi told us was the Ish Chacham Me'od. He was described as exceptionally smart, right? Something that nobody else had. Rashi, they're quoted in Medrash, Chacham Lira'a. He was exceptionally smart, but somebody who uses those brains, but not always for good. At the same time, the advice that Yonadav gave Amnon, when he said, why not pretend you're sick and tell David to invite Tamar over to bring some food. So the Malbim argued pretty convincingly that Yonadav never imagined that Amnon would use that as an excuse to rape Tamar. I mean, that's going to destroy his whole future, right? Yonadav assumed that David would see as obvious as Yonadav sees that Amnon wants to marry Tamar. He'd pick up on the hint and, would go ahead with the shidduch. So what's Yonadav going to do now? This person who is exceptionally smart, has reason to be disgusted with Amnon, either because of just morally disgusted with Amnon or disgusted with Amnon because what a fool, I made sure to be best friends with the crown prince. And how could I, after I invested so much capital, can you imagine me like, what was Amnon like, socially? If you're the smartest man in the world, I imagine Amnon, selfish, greedy, drinking, spoiled Amnon. It's probably not so pleasant for Yonadav to spend day after day befriending Amnon, right? So after all that time he invested, it's all a waste because Amnon had to go just do what he wanted to do, and now he's a dead man. But what's Yonadav going to do next? Yonadav, who's really politically savvy, he's a nephew, right? He's not a prince, he's a nephew, but he is careful to be close to the people in power. So what's he going to do? So everyone is running back. Right? There's total panic in the palace. David gets the rumor that Avshalom murdered all of the sons. Every single prince who was at the party was killed. Immediately, David tears his clothing. He sits on the ground. Everyone's mourning. All of a sudden, Yonadav jumps up. Yonadav ben Shimachi David Bayomer. He comes out of nowhere and he says, no, don't worry. It wasn't everyone who was killed. It was just Amnon who was killed. Right? And he was killed because Avshalom was taking revenge for Tamar. Okay, it was just Amnon. It was just Amnon, and Avshalom only did it for revenge. How does Yonadav know this? And why is he saying it? So how does Yonadav know it? Well, there are two possibilities. One possibility, that Mikra kind of raises this very, very briefly. I was thinking this. I don't think it's the shot. One possibility is that maybe Yonadav was in a secret league with Avshalom. Maybe Avshalom really wants Amnon to come to the party. So he talks to Yonadav. He knows that Yonadav is not happy with Amnon, and Yonadav gets Amnon to go. And maybe it's a whole conspiracy. It's possible. It's possible. More likely, probably, is that Yonadav, who's exceptionally smart, right away realizes what nobody else was able to see. Right? He's able to realize, wait a second, why was Avshalom so insistent on having Amnon come? It must be because despite him being able to fake out everybody else, it's because he has never forgiven Avshalom and he wants him dead. And the Dot Mikra also points out that at minimum, Yonadav realized this and did not warn Amnon not to go to the party, right? He reads the room that no one else is able to read. And it makes no sense. He says it must be that this is what happened, right? Chazal, who did Chazal say is the Chacham? Is a Chacham? Harawa as Hanola. And that's exactly what Yonadav, the Ish Chacham Ma'od, is able to do over here. He's able to figure out what happened. You know, it's kind of the past, but it's also the future because the fugitives are going to come running in very soon. And Yonadav is able to do two things, really three things right away. Number one, he's able to publicly break his association with Amnon by reminding everyone of what Amnon did. Number two, he's able to get in the good graces of David HaMelech because, you know, he's going to be the one to comfort David when David thinks that all his sons have been killed. So, you know, it was Yonadav who was the one who jumped in and said, no, it was really just Amnon. And number three, Yonadav has been able to jump horses from backing the crown prince, who was Amnon, to the new crown prince, which is Avshalom. Avshalom is next in line for the throne, right? Well, by publicly minimizing and excusing what Avshalom does, Yonadav is able to get himself on Avshalom's side. So he's dropping Amnon like a hot potato, because he's dead, who needs him anymore? He's getting on David's good side, and he's also getting on Avshalom's good side. Welcome to the palace where we have these kind of political personalities. You could think of Yonadav like a Harvona, you know, like a Harvona except much smarter. You know, he's not good. He's not using his brains for good or bad, and that's probably what Rashi meant. He's kind of an amoral character who has immense talents, but he's just trying to use it for himself. Welcome to the world of the royal palace, right? And these politics are going to get uglier and uglier as we get to next week and then after that with Yoav and Avshalom and going on down the road. Okay, so sure enough, Levi tells us that Yonadav was absolutely correct. Avshalom ran away. All the other sons come back. Yonadav once again says, "Hinei b'nei Melech bo k'dvar v'chak k'naya." I was right? I called my shot, and that's what it's going to be. Okay, so Yonadav is not afraid of taking credit. He wants to make sure everyone knows. Remember, I was the one who said it. Okay. Now they all come back. They have a major mourning. Right, it was a terrible tragedy. Right? And we know, especially for David HaMelech, He knows ultimately why this is happening, right? On the one level, it's happening because of the free will decision of Amnon and the free will decision of Avshalom. But David HaMelech also knows that he is seeing the prophecy of Nasan coming true before his eyes, right? The evil coming out of his own house. He's had the evil of his own house with his son raping his daughter. Now he has the evil coming out of his own house with one son murdering the other. Okay. The Navi then tells us Avshalom runs away. To Talmai Melech Geshur, who is his grandfather, right? His mother's father, his mother Yifas Toar. Then the Navi tells us that David mourns many days for Amnon, once again reminding us of Yosef, right? Yaakov mourning for Yosef. We have David mourning many days for Amnon. Okay, not the greatest look for David, possibly, but we can understand it. And then Navi tells us again, Avshalom barach v'yelach geshur v'hisham shalosh yamim. So it's a little bit strange. The Navi tells us in two psukim back to back that Avshalom runs away to Geshur. The way that Abarbanel explains what's happening here, he has an interesting suggestion. He says, first, Avshalom ran away to be with the king. But when you're with the king, he'd travel, you know? So his grandfather, the king, would travel to one place and Avshalom would be with him. He'd travel somewhere else and Avshalom would be with him. But then Avshalom gets nervous that David is going to try to get him extradited. So Barbanel suggests that he only stays, you know, like the fortified city of Geshur. Avshalom is taking precautions against any possibility. Hey, could be. And he stays there for 3 years. And then the Navi tells us at the end, Rashi says his nefesh, David's soul starts to yearn for Avshalom. Once again, we see that magnetic personality of Avshalom, right? You could have somebody who murdered David's son. David's in mourning for him for many days. David and all his kids were weeping. There's just something unavoidably attractive about Avshalom, and David's nefesh just starts to yearn for it. The last thing we're told, ki nicham al Amnon ki meis. Amnon has died, and David has accepted that, and David has moved on. So there are two points just to address in closing here with this image of David moving on from the death of Amnon. One point is the question that's asked by the Ralbag. And the Ralbag and Abarbanel give different answers to it. This is the second time in as many prakim that we've seen David react to the death of a child. But he does so in totally different ways, right? In Perek Yud Beis, when he lost the baby that he had with Bathsheba, so as soon as he was told that the baby died, he got up off of the ground and he changed his clothes and he bathed and he had a meal. As opposed to here, the death of Amnon, where he mourns for many, many days. So why is there this radical discrepancy between David's mourning for Amnon and his not mourning for the baby? So the Ralbag suggests that the question is a red herring. The Ralbag says, no, of course David mourned. But the contrast is just because David was going so all out in fasting and doing everything he could to try to save the child, he then gets up, gets dressed, and then he's going to sit Shiva, right? But Abarbanel says, no, that's not what's happening at all. He says, like we argued a couple of weeks ago, that David did not sit Shiva for the baby because he recognized that the baby was an Aphel. No, he said the halachic, the kind of informal Aphel. He realized this was not a viable child, that this child was never going to live. Right? Hashem killed the child. Hashem announced he was going to die on his first day, and Hashem killed him before he had a bris milah, before day number 7. But here, says Abarbanel, Amnon was a grown man. Amnon was a fully live person. He could have been so much. He could have had so much potential. And despite what he turns into, you know, any father is going to mourn any child. So that's the explanation that Abarbanel has over here. But then there's just one last point, and it's nothing subtle, but it's so important to end, right? After we've talked about David and Yonadav and Avshalom, but as we finish the parak, we finish with Amnon, we can't help but just have one last statement about what he did with Tamar. And then Abi says, the last image we have of Amnon, I think ever, I don't think we ever mentioned Amnon ever again, could be wrong with that, but I'm pretty sure, the last image we ever have of Amnon is David getting over it because Amnon is dead. Now, if we've had Yosef be the person who we think of the entire parak over here, so we can't help but realize that this is a dramatic opposite, right? Because, of course, what happened at the end of the sale of Yosef was likewise, Yaakov mourns for many days, just like David mourns for Amnon for many days. But what happens at the end? David for Amnon gets over it. Yaakov for Yosef. Right? Yaakov could not get over the death of Yosef. Now we know part of that is because Yosef hadn't actually died. But the point is that ultimately what the Navi is doing with the last image we have of Amnon is we say, look, we have this person who could have been the prince. We have this person who was the chosen one of all of the sons. He had all the potential. He had all the opportunity for greatness. Could have been a Yosef. In the end, he is the exact opposite, right? He is the exact opposite in how he lived. And now it's the exact opposite in terms of his legacy after his death. The loss of Yosef, we didn't actually lose him, but the loss of somebody like a Yosef would be something that nobody could ever get over. The way Amnon lives his life, it's that once he's gone, ki nicham al Amnon ki meis. Amnon is dead. You know, as Chazal might say, they don't know how to say this, but you know, dead ba'olam hazed, dead ba'olam haba. And now David is able to move on from that and able to come back to Avshalom. And it's just one last kind of, you know, statement that the Navi needs for us to understand, right? We need to internalize is thinking of Amnon as this person Amnon Kimes, just the total opposite of a Yosef Atzadik. Okay, so that